And anyway, he starts explaining. He's like, "Oh man, things are really hard." I'm like, "Oh, tell us more." He's like, "Well, normally we would have 60 pickers to help me pick coffee. Right now, they've all left Honduras. They've all walked,
To the
like
southern
literally
border of the
walked.
United States.
Yeah, they're trying to find more opportunity in the US because there's no opportunity for them to stay here in Honduras and pick coffee." And so now, instead of 60 pickers, he's got 15. And that's this year. From last year, 60 last year, 15 this year. And that means the reality for him is this award-winning farm, he's kind of having to abandon parts of the farm that he can't quite get to, that now have problems with insects. And if you don't pick all the coffee cherries off the farm, you don't clean it up properly, it's a great breeding ground. It's a little hotel for Bora to move in. And so that was kind of like, oh, okay, there's something really interesting happening here that's a little scary to think about.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop. It's time to become a coffee consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode one of a brand new five-part series with returning guest Nolan Hertie from Proud Mary's and Auntie Peg's. Nolan, thanks for coming back. This is going to be amazing.
Welcome, Lee. Great to be back. Nice to see you again.
It is a very different time in our industry than the last time you came on the podcast. And I do want to kind of say something to you that everybody said to me about you. People who listened to your series, it was one of the most watched series that we have ever had. And the thing that men kept saying to me was, thanks for bringing Nolan on the podcast because I got to see myself reflected in his vulnerability. And I feel like that's such a beautiful gift that you gave to our industry. So thank you on behalf of a lot of the men that we talked about a whole bunch of things in that series. And I think it's a really beautiful thing that most men identified with, and it was only men that contacted me about your series, the thing that they were grateful for was your vulnerability. It wasn't about the information that you shared about business or anything like that. It was the vulnerability, which for me was a really wonderful thing. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
I mean, it was good for us, that chat too, Lee, right?
It was
nice.
So good.
It was nice to kind of reflects back on the journey and what it all means. And I think that that keeps coming up for me when we kind of hit some heavy questions, like we probably hit today. What's it all for? Like, why? Like, what are we actually doing?
Yeah.
What does it all matter? It's kind of it's easy to get lost in the busyness and the noise and the race and this kind of rat race or the wheel that we kind of keep spinning. And so cool to stop and reflect and actually look at what matters and what doesn't and what's really valuable to us, What do we really value these days?
Word. And just have a good chat about it. Like, we had a chat the other day and my first question to you was like, are we in a coffee crisis in your mind? And I want to ask you, I want to start this conversation because the whole series is going to be, how did we get here and where are we going, right? Now, in this episode, we're going to be talking about specifically the coffee crisis. Do you think we're in a coffee crisis?
I mean, yes, and I think I'd extend it though further than just coffee. I do think the word crisis in general, and maybe like many industries, and just the way we've gone about things. I mean, I kind of think about the planet, and really the coffee is part of the planet, and it is a incredible plant on the planet that we live on, and has been an amazing medicine really for us. You know, it's a medicine, a plant medicine. And the way we have gone about things and taken and treated the planet, it's no wonder that we don't have a whole lot of the natural side of things left. You know, we've really kind of pushed it pretty far, and kind of happily turned a blind eye to it. It's been like, oh, I don't need to know about all that stuff.
Get more specific for
Most of
me.
the time, okay.
Right.
Well, I feel like growing up, like I just feel like it was always like, where does our rubbish go? You know, where does that go? And I remember going to a kid, I grew up in a mining town in Western Australia. There was a dump, you know, and it went to the dump and it got burnt, and some people would scavenge through the dump to find little treasures or whatever, but it's still not a very nice image in my mind, this like pile of rubbish and burning and the ground, and it doesn't I don't know, it doesn't feel great. And some of the imagery that we have seen around the ocean and the ocean cleanup and some of the riverways and the storms, particularly like again, COVID shut a lot of industry down, and it was crazy to see like, oh yeah, that's what the river would look like if we stopped for a second.
I
Yeah,
was
so
living in California at the time, and let
you
me,
were, yeah.
yeah, I was in California at the time, and let me tell you, you'd never know that the air quality could be that good in California.
Yeah, and I mean it's not like every day that the world is going to shut down like
No.
that, so it's a bit of an anomaly. But it was kind of cool to see, maybe what it could look like. So yeah, yes, I think there is this potential problems and crisis that not everyone wants to really like think about too hard or look at. And as long as we're still getting the things that we need and our bit's still working, we kind of have this, I feel like we have this default to turn a blind eye a little bit to things. And that is not going to work for us anymore. Like that bit is changing because it's being forced, the hand's being forced a little bit, and you can't ignore it. And so it's going to be interesting times for sure. And I feel like when we say coffee crisis, well, my first thought is around, well, what are we doing? What do we do? How do we do things? What is the right way to do things? And what does good look like? You know, like what? I don't like to sit. What I would say is I don't like to sit in the negative and the dark for too long. I like to kind of try and bring in some hope and some positive thought, because I do believe that it's really important for us to have something to
Find a way out.
call in. Yeah, well, and to attract. Otherwise, you attract the things that you don't want. So it's important we not ignore. I'm not, I don't want to bypass the fact there's a big ugly problem, but let's find ways to kind of contribute to making it better, not worse.
And I wonder, are we at the point in our industry where enough people are awake to the fact that we're in a crisis?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not. Like I was speaking the other day around sometimes I find it a little frustrating with coffee when we don't approach it holistically, because like traveling and learning where coffee comes from and the different terroir and the different kind of like regional characteristics that I might find from somewhere like Brazil. Now, a lot of baristas may not have had the privilege and opportunity to go to Brazil, and they're more familiar with working with an Ethiopian coffee. And so they go about their way getting that to taste really good. But they're very different things. And some of the qualities that we try and get out of Brazilian coffee is very different to an Ethiopian. And so we don't always treat it like it wants to be treated. And I think that speaks to a little bit of our maybe naivety to where it comes from in the first place, or what we really know about it, or how to kind of like see it as a whole thing, you know?
If we look specifically at what we talked about on the podcast the last couple of weeks, which is this situation in Ethiopia, and a lot of the feedback that we got from people was, is this real? Or like, are you guys exaggerating this? How serious is this? Like, I don't know how much more we can say to people. The coffee from Harar has gone and is not coming back. I don't know how much more people need to be convinced that this is a serious situation. Another thing that we have since found out is that a number of agronomists from Brazil have contacted me in the last 24 hours and said, hey, by the way, I watched your series on what's going on in Ethiopia. The same thing's happening in Brazil. And people in Central America contacted me and said, hey, listen, a similar thing with eucalyptus is happening in Central America.
And just to explain what's happening today, like what are you hearing or seeing or
So
what?
for those who haven't who didn't see the series, coffee producers in Ethiopia for about the last 6 to 10 years. So eucalyptus has existed in Ethiopia for over 100 years. But there is a new use case for it. There are I'm not going to speak specifics about who it is that set up companies in Ethiopia. But they use the eucalyptus trees to create fibers and to create different wood use cases for the eucalyptus, right? Now, that's a new cash crop that isn't pegged to a futures market. If you don't understand what that means, please go and look it up. I'm not going to bog the conversation down with that. But eucalyptus and chat is a cash crop. So you grow it, you harvest it, you go and sell it and you get handed cash. Coffee doesn't work that way, right? Coffee's price is determined by something on a futures market. Look it up. Now, you can't fault coffee producers in Ethiopia who have turned around and said, these people who have roasteries where we're forced to sell a specific grade of coffee external to this country, they're not paying enough for this cash crop, for this crop to cover our cost of production for us to have a livable wage. But if I plant eucalyptus or if I plant khat, I am going to have a better lifestyle, at least for the short term. But that's a very short-term perspective on it because those two crops are decimating their soil. Then we find out that the same thing with eucalyptus and khat is happening in Brazil, in the mountainous areas. So the mechanized picking on the flatter areas, that doesn't seem to be disrupted by it because they're still getting paid above the cost of production because they can save on labor with machines. But in the mountains, they're struggling with labor and the inputs. And so people are planting eucalyptus and khat instead. But because it's not being talked about, we have a problem.
No, we have a problem for sure. I mean, no surprise that there's maybe easier ways to make money. And I think Survive is probably, or Survival maybe.
Yeah, you can't fault them.
From the line.
I mean, we haven't done the right thing by them.
Well, I mean, not enough of us have done the right thing by them. You know, like it's a very small thing. The higher price for coffee, you know, it's not a common thing. No. There is definitely like, in my mind, there is a line, and I'm been working like on trying to understand how to articulate where that line is or what it is. Kind of, I see it in a cup score. Like I kind of don't want to buy coffees below a certain cup score, but I also see it in like, well, I also don't have any way of really understanding where that came from. It's right. Tends to be that that's where people are taking advantage of. That's where the less care for the planet, maybe not the sustainability side, but cheaper products, and ultimately taking advantage of the situation, cross the other line to the other side. It's more expensive. It's much harder to swallow. You have to then go out and do some marketing and do some really good explanation as to why it is worth more money to the consumer. And so like I consciously made a decision for us as a company to be really mindful of which line we're stepping on and to stay on the line that kind of is going to do something that we feel good about, you know, as a business. And that has meant sacrificing parts of the business to kind of stay true to what we believe in. And I mean, coming from Australia, Lee, like we both know just how hard the Australian market is right now. And it has been, let's be honest, it has been for a long time. We had a really hot run. You know, we would say we had the coffee capital of the world for a minute, you know, like it really just went for it. And we all kind of pushed and pushed and pushed to be the best where we possibly could. Super exciting place to be. The dollar was even really good for a while there.
For
there
was a moment. Second.
The dollar was strong, for a second. I mean, there was a minute where we were winning all the COEs. We were kind of buying all these really special coffees. And then it just got really hard. And I think when I think reflect back on that, it really wasn't sustainable pre-COVID. It was already in a pretty tough position. You know, not selling things to what they're really worth. And the squeeze just kept kind of happening on the small business. And as you say, COVID kind of did give some people a leg up in some cases to try and keep going. But really, some things just had to close down. And we're really right now seeing more and more things close down. Also, we're seeing, I guess we have to cut corners, people cutting corners to try and stay afloat to pay fair living wages means you have to be really creative somewhere to create profit. You can't run a business without profit. It has to have profit. We can't breathe without our oxygen. We need the oxygen.
Otherwise, it's an expensive hobby, folks.
Sure. And it's the same for the producer, right? Like, this is what we're
exactly
talking about.
Yeah.
Same for the producer. And I was in Honduras in end of March, and I got to take Ash Officer, our head roaster from Melbourne, with us for the first time. It was a really fun trip to kind of explore Honduras with him. And we had a couple of tins of the winning lot from Cup of Excellence. We were lucky enough to buy the winning lot last year. It's a Pacamara, incredible coffee, and we had this really, really nice story on the card and the photo of the producer. and I had these tins. And we're in Honduras, and we're with Bentham and Paz, who just won COE this year.
Yeah.
Good friend, amazing producer, but also he was really the lead and the contact that helped put Honduras on the map for specialty coffee and introduced roasters and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so, oh, hey, do you want to go see Eduardo? You know, you bought his coffee. You should go visit him. I'm like, yes, please. Let's go see him. And so we got in the car and we go on this trip to go see him. And it's so exciting to kind of like connect with someone that's produced this really special, you know, the winning lot. And he didn't really have any idea, you know, who was coming to visit him or what was going on. And we had a look around his where he's drying the coffee, and he'd built this incredible dryer, steel frame, really well designed, really well built. It's going to last forever. He's going to be able to dry down coffee really in a really stable environment for Honduras. And that money had come from him winning COE. And then he takes us up to look around the farm. Incredible farm. I have this amazing footage, drone flying over the Pacamar, beautiful view. Pino de Oro is the name of the farm. And it means golden pine, this beautiful big pine tree on the farm. And anyway, he starts explaining. He's like, oh, man, things are really hard. I'm like, oh, tell us more. He's like, well, normally we would have 60 pickers to help me pick coffee. Mm. Right now, they've all left Honduras. They've all walked.
To the southern border of the United States.
Yeah. They're trying to find more opportunity in the U.S. because there's no opportunity for them to stay here in Honduras and pick coffee. And so now, instead of 60 pickers, he's got 15. And that's this year. From last year, you know, 60 last year, 15 this year. And that means the reality for him is this award-winning farm, he's kind of having to abandon parts of the farm that he can't quite get to, that now have problems with insects. And, you know, if you don't pick all the coffee cherries off the farm, you don't clean it up properly, it's a great breeding ground. It's a little hotel for the borer to move in. And so that was kind of like, oh, okay, there's something really interesting happening here that's a little scary to think about. And the positive to this story, like what I do like about it, is that Pacamara lot, that would have been $2,000, US dollars, that he would have earned for that Pacamara lot if he had sold it at $5 a pound. A good Pacamara, I mean, we would pay probably actually more like $10 or $12 a pound, depending on the cup score. It really has to get up into the high 80s, close to the 90s to hit those prices. And this is well in the 90s. We paid $62.50 a pound for that lot. So instead of earning $2,000, he earned $30,000 for this small lot of coffee. Not a lot of coffee, a small amount of coffee. This is super interesting to me because now we go back to the house and I'm like, hey, let me brew a coffee for you. I'm the barista. I'm the roaster. You probably haven't had your coffee roasted well or brewed well for you. You know, like in their home, they don't really have things set up to make good coffee. And really their information about their product, they rely on Ben Paz and the guys in the lab and us to give them information. And anyway, we're in the kitchen with his wife and his son. And the wife is like, who the fuck are these guys? What is going on? And they've knocked a wall down in the kitchen and expanded her kitchen with the money from the winnings. And it was like, there was a bit of pride and like they feel, you know, but it's still a very humble abode in the mountains. And I'm like, hey, let me brew this coffee. And I pull out my Commandante. And I'm like, hey, feel this. It's like the C60. It's so heavy. I'm like, dude, check out this grinder. And he's like, oh, I've got one of those. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? You did not have a Commandante. And he's like, no, I have a Commandante. And on the shelf, unopened, in a box, is a brand new Commandante that he won when he won COE. unopened, hasn't even like had a look. And I'm like, come on, dude, this is an amazing coffee grinder. Let me make the first coffee on it for you. Let me show you how to use it with the lot that won.
With your coffee.
Couldn't have scripted it like better. Amazing. It was just a really magical moment. And there we are in the kitchen. We brew this coffee and it fucking rips so hard. It's such an incredible coffee. If you're still in Australia listening to this, you might be lucky enough to be able to get your hands on some because there's still a little bit left. But we sold it out in the States and I missed it. Anyway, we're standing around drinking this incredible coffee in the house and Arturo, our host, starts reading out the card and his story about them in the kitchen of the house. And it was just like, oh, yeah, no, that's your story. And that's us trying to put it out there in the world. And the wife was just like, oh, this is really...
Dude, I've got really chills. I've
yeah,
got
it's
chills.
Really special.
Yeah.
And honestly, Lee, I've been fighting internally with my crew to, hey, we need to keep these cards. And people are like, well, they're expensive. It's so much time involved. And doesn't always get to the end consumer. Often there's a bit of wastage.
A lot of, yeah.
Cards. But there's so much fucking value in people's stories. And us telling the stories and like having a real product in the first place and being able to make an impact with those special lots like that did give him what he needs to then reinvest that money back into the farm to continue to produce quality. He's still going to struggle with the freaking conditions that are in Honduras and coffee right now. He's still going to find it hard to find pickers. Thankfully, he has a massive leg up thanks to his competition and a high price tag that's going to allow him to continue to reinvest and to innovate. And that's his path to survival, this crisis that we're speaking to.
Is it sustainable, Nolan? Or is he – and I swear to God, to anyone who's listening, I'm not asking these questions because I'm trying to be a Debbie Downer. I'm asking these questions because we have to ask the questions, right?
Not sustainable unless he like I think I asked him when he said, hey, I can't find pickets. I'm like, hey, just curiosity, like, what do you think your cost of production is to produce coffee on this farm? Like, where do you think you're at? And the number was like $2.50 to $3 a pound for cost of production was where he was kind of at in his mind. And it's hard to say how accurate.
Yeah.
That number is, but coffee's less than $2.20 a pound. He has to, in order to survive, produce special coffee and charge a higher price tag. And there are less and less people wanting to spend money on a higher price tag because we're getting squeezed at the other end too, right?
Labor, rent, interest rate
and
hikes, everything.
You want to buy your coffee $3 a cup? Come on. Like that ain't gonna help. That ain't gonna help him out. That won't work, you know. And it needs to move up, you know, the whole way for it to be sustainable. And so that is the coffee that in that instance, we sell that coffee for $17 a cup. And that might sound ludicrous, you know, but it's really not. It's a freaking amazing cup of coffee, and it. Again, is creating these opportunities. And I guess like not everyone can win the competition. Not everyone can produce that higher level coffee. Not everyone gets that like lucky moment, but there will be for sure a ripple effect of inspiration that guy brings to the Honduras community around him.
Right.
And in the past, what I've really found inspiring about the Honduras coffee community has been how hungry they have been to compete. And it's scary for me to see and to hear that that's changing and that some of those younger folks are walking and are out of there. And so, I mean, there are many different examples. Obviously, every country has its own challenges, but that's one that like I find is an interesting example, you know.
100%. The thing that I'm trying to undo in my mind or kind of like untangle in my mind is How much of what's happening right now is a convergence of a lot of different scenarios at the same time? The climate crisis, cost of living crisis, et cetera, et cetera, versus how much is us made? And that's what we're going to talk about in the next episode, folks. So please join us as we explore what role did we play in creating this crisis? So see you in the next episode. Peace, love and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.